You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Welcome to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and you are listening to this show live on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, but remember, you can listen to any of our shows on the Heritage Radio Network website, or you can get them all on iTunes. You can podcast any show on iTunes. And we are now also broadcasting 24 hours a day, so there's never an excuse to not listen to Heritage Radio Network. So tonight's show of Why We Cook, tonight's episode, is dedicated to a man named Ronald House, who recently died at the ripe old age of 83. Have you ever heard of him? No? Well, neither had I. But it turns out that he is the person who is probably the most indirectly responsible for leading me to be sitting tonight in this chair on this rainy Tuesday night in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So Ronald House was an inventor, and he invented a lot of things, mostly toys, some chemical applications, luminescent powder, non-toxic Play-Doh, the Close and Play record player. Ring any bells? Still no clue? Well, Ronald House also invented the Easy Bake Oven. Now, I know you know what the Easy Bake Oven is. You can't be listening to this show and not know what that is. You could not have grown up in late 20th century America and not know what the Easy Bake Oven is. The first one was sold in 1963. It's been around a long time, during the last days of the post-war boom years, when little girls were meant to aspire to a life of domesticity, and that was about it. It was marketed to them. But if you really don't know what an Easy Bake Oven is, you know, maybe you weren't born in the States, or you went to some alternative school, weren't allowed to watch TV. Maybe you were raised by wolves or in a commune in Northern California or something. I'll fill you in. The Easy Bake Oven was a toy made by the Kenner Company. And it was, like I said, marketed to little girls to teach them sort of how to bake. And it was basically a plastic box styled to look vaguely like an oven. And inside that plastic box was a 100-watt light bulb that created heat. The modern Easy Bake Ovens, incidentally, now have a built-in heating element instead of the light bulb, because I think they saw the era of the CFL light bulb coming and realized that the days of the 100-watt were very limited. But anyway, the Easy Bake Oven had this light bulb, and it heated up, and it came with these little tiny cake pans and tiny little baking tools and tiny little boxes of cake mix and icing mix. And you would just add water to one of the mixes, and then you'd fill the little pan, and you'd slide it into a slot on one side of the oven. And then it was done, ding, it would come out a slot on the other side of the oven. And you never had to put your hand inside. You never had to open a door. So it was, you know, relatively safe. And that was the Easy Bake Oven. And you would bake these little packets of mix, and you would get these little tiny, tiny cakes. When I was doing a little research for this show, I read that Kenner had actually recently introduced a model a few years ago that had a real hinged oven door, like an open hinging oven door, so it was a more realistic experience. But the problem was that with that one was that all the little girls' fingers and little boys were getting stuck in the oven door and getting burned. And in a few cases, the kids' fingers had to be amputated. So that ill-conceived model was quickly recalled. They had to recall over 900,000 of that model. So now they're back to the little slide entrance to the oven. Anyway, so if you don't know what an Easy Bake Oven is, that's what it is. It was a toy. So anyway, once, you know, you got your Easy Bake Oven, you baked your little cake, you slid it out, you cooled it off, and then you mixed up a little bit of frosting mix that came with it, and voila, you ate your little 3-bite cake mix confection. I think the originals only came with about three packets of the mix, so you were, you know, you were hooked. You were like the, you know, the crack whore who had to keep going back for more, and you had to make a trip to the store to get your new packets. And this was in the era before stores like Walmart and Target, which stocked everything. So you were kind of at the mercy of your local toy store to see if they carried the stuff that you wanted. You know, in the days before the internet, kids, we actually had to go to stores. Anyway, I was born in 1967, and the first one came out in 63. And so by the time I was conscious of the existence of the Easy Bake Oven in the early 70s, the styling had changed a little bit. It had gone from this kind of drab, boxy, ugly green thing from the early 60s to this kind of early 70s incarnation that was orange and brown and had this nice kind of plaid sticker on the side. And it was a lot groovier. It was kind of styled after like the Brady Bunch kitchen. And it went through a lot of design updates in the decades following that. If you look online, you can see pictures of it. You know, they got kind of groovier, and they had the avocado green and the harvest gold, and it went up through the 70s. And then in the 80s, it went very kind of standard, white, slick, boxy look. And then they started styling it to look like a microwave. So the ones now actually look more like microwaves, which I find kind of depressing that they're not even really recognizable as ovens. And now it's called the Easy Bake Oven and Snack Center, not just the oven anymore. They also introduced a model a while back called, I think it was called like the Real Meal Oven or Full Meal, Real Meal Oven. And that was marketed to be non-gender specific. So that was for boys and girls. And in that one, you got little packets to make things like macaroni and cheese and french fries. So you could have non-gender specific fat kids when you bought that oven. But anyway, I was very aware of the existence of the Easy Bake Oven when I was a little kid, because I knew that I was never, ever going to be allowed to own one. There was no way that my socialist-leaning, early do-it-yourselfer parents were going to spend $15.95 on a plastic box with a light bulb and mixes that were sold separately for their kids, when right upstairs in the kitchen was our perfectly good 1968 white GE electric range and oven that was even able to clean itself. Self-cleaning. I have a vague recollection of maybe there being a hand-me-down one floating around our house, but I doubt it even had the light bulb in it, and there were definitely no little boxes of cake mix in my toy box, because, you know, I could use the big oven. I mean, so what was the point of having a hand-me-down Easy Bake Oven if it didn't have the light bulb, didn't get hot, didn't have the cake mix? I could just pretend, you know, make little fake cakes in there. You know, so I probably, if I did have it, if I remember correctly, I just used it as like a toy oven, if anything at all. But my parents, you know, my parents' reasoning was sound. Of course, you know, things you hate your parents for when you're little, you grow up to realize that they were actually right, at least some things. You know, their reasoning was sound. If I wanted to bake, I could bake in the kitchen with my mom in the real oven with real ingredients in normal size pans and make real baked goods. And my parents, they were, you know, very early on aware of things like the toxic fumes, the dangers of fumes, toxic fumes, especially the toxic fumes that came from heating up plastics. They didn't want us heating up any plastic in the house that made toxic fumes, and especially not heating up plastic with food in it that you would then eat. I'm not sure, you know, what magazines they were reading at the time, but this is the kind of stuff that now people are really aware of and worried about, like BPA and baby bottles and cans and microwave packaging and stuff. Must have been, you know, like Mother Earth News, Consumer Reports, stuff like that, that they were reading back then. So never any plastic like that. Although, perversely, there was a very, very cold winter in my childhood when the gym flooded in the big, huge suburban high school where my father taught. And the flood destroyed the whole hardwood floor. It had this, you know, old-fashioned hardwood strip oak floor in the gym, and the whole floor had to be ripped out. And my father saw that as an opportunity, and he hauled home a huge load of that ripped out wood floor. And we used it as firewood for years. We burned it in our fireplace. And I can't even imagine what kinds of fumes were coming off the sealant and the varnish that was used back then on that wood floor. So we were breathing that in every winter from the fireplace, but we couldn't use our little Easy Bake Oven. Well, we didn't have one, so we didn't use one. You know, it makes a little 6-inch plastic cake pan seem like a breath of, you know, pristine mountain air in comparison. But anyway, there was going to be no Easy Bake Oven for me. And I know on some level, even back then, I agreed with them. I felt like it was kind of a stupid, trashy thing to have. Why bake mini when you can go all out? But the allure of those tiny pans and the tiny little tools and the glowing light bulb, you know, not included, it was all really seductive. I've always loved really tiny things. Anything miniaturized is so much more compelling and so much more interesting. It gets you to look at them really close up, and it makes you kind of feel like a giant. And I think because I'm only 4'11", that could have a lot to do with it. We have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about the Easy Bake Oven. Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. If you're a fan of this show, you can find me or the show on Facebook at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. On Facebook, I would love to hear from you. Any questions, comments, compliments, criticism, let me know. Become a fan. I would appreciate it. Also, on the heritageradionetwork.com website, you can now leave comments for each show. And I look every week for those comments because I want to know what people are thinking about the show. So please leave a comment if you have a thought that you would like to express or tell me. So we're talking this week about the death of Ronald Howes. And Ronald Howes was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven. We're really not talking about his death. We're talking about how the Easy Bake Oven influenced me in an indirect way to ultimately become the culinarian and chef that I am now. Mostly because I didn't have one and I wasn't allowed to have one. And my parents were perfectly happy to have me use our real stove and our real oven. And that's how I started cooking. And that's how I learned to love to cook and to bake, because we skipped right over the toy phase. And I went right up to the kitchen and started doing it myself at a really young age, actually, which ultimately led me to be sitting here tonight in this handmade radio station in the back of a handmade pizza restaurant in the ground zero of handmade Brooklyn Art and Objects Central, Bushwick. So that's how the death of this guy sort of indirectly, you know, led me to be here. Well, not his death, his invention. And, you know, as much as I'd like to be mad at my parents for a lot of things, I mean, we're all still mad at our parents about a lot of things. And as much as I'd like to be mad at them for still denying me the pleasure of my own tiny plastic oven, I feel like they did their job really early on in teaching me the value of the real and the handmade, and not the, you know, not the plastic versions of things. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. We ate our fair share of cake mix and canned soup and processed food. It was the 70s and it was a recession. And as much as we tried to balance that all out, it was, that was still a big, big part of our lives. We had a lot of back boxed macaroni and cheese and stuff like that. But we also, you know, learned how to bake cake in the big oven with the big pans using the real flour, because that's how you were supposed to do it. So I started cooking and baking on my own at a pretty young age. And I learned how to make my own Play-Doh even younger. And a lot of other things. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She stayed home from work for about the first 9 or 10 years of my life. I think she went back to work when I was about 10 or 11. And she used to make her own bread. She made her own jams, her own jelly. She would bake pies. We always had pickles going. I mean, we gardened. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of the DIY happening in our little suburban house on the prairie of Long Island. And I may have talked about this on a previous show, but for a while, during the energy crisis of the 70s and the Jimmy Carter years, we even heated our house with coal, which when I look back on it now, I'm horrified, because I feel like we played our little tiny part in the melting of the polar ice cap by burning that coal. But we also stuck it to the oil companies by denying them our thousands of dollars for heating oil. So it all balances out. It's okay. I mean, it certainly wasn't some utopian ideal. We were not a happy family. My parents' marriage was collapsing, and we were generally a pretty miserable bunch of people. And because it was the 70s, we all looked really, really bad. But it certainly taught me a few things about the value of homemade, homegrown, handmade type of stuff. And it taught me that it's not so hard to make stuff yourself, or to grow a couple of vegetables, or to repair something that's torn or broken. You know, things can be made and things can be fixed with minimal effort. And that, you know, cooking and baking are actually pretty easy once you know how to do it, and can be really fun and really gratifying. And it's so funny now, as I, you know, see all of these things that people are re-embracing now that, you know, we did back then, like knitting and sewing and gardening and composting. I mean, history definitely does repeat itself. And I feel like right now it feels a lot like 1978 again, but with better clothes, I have to say, and better hair. So I decided at Christmas this year to make a batch of Play-Doh again. You know, it's really called baker's clay Play-Doh. It had been at least 30 years since I had made it, but I still remembered how to do it. I remembered the recipe. You mix, I think it's like 3 cups of flour and 2 cups of salt and 1 cup of water, and you mix it all together. I wanted to make some ornaments, handmade Christmas tree ornaments for my niece, because she's half Jewish. My sister's Jewish, her husband isn't, but they were having a Christmas tree this year, and they asked me if I would get them ornaments as a gift. And I, you know, looked around in the store. Everything was made in, you know, China. I didn't want to buy any. I thought it would be really nice to make some. And I wanted to make those ornaments kind of represent her half Jewishness, so that they should be sort of silly and fun, but, you know, they should still represent the fact that she's not all Christmas. She's half Hanukkah too. So I mixed up a batch of the dough. It's really easy. It came right back to me. And, you know, you just mix it together, you shape it, you bake it until it's hard, and then you paint it. It's the same thing as Play-Doh, except that if you bake it or just let it dry out, it hardens. You know, whereas Play-Doh, you keep it in the little cans and it stays soft. You can color the dough before you bake it, or you can paint it after it's baked. And I chose to paint it after it was baked. And so I made the dough into like little bagels and little braided loaves of challah. And then I decided to make it into some really big noses, you know, to kind of represent the family. So I made some really big noses out of Play-Doh, and I painted the insides of their nostrils really dark so they would look, you know, like real noses. And I just had a lot of fun with it. And then I made some like fried egg ornaments. I made some snowmen and, you know, random things. And I had a great time. It totally took me back to when I was a little kid and I used to do that sort of stuff. And back then I used to make little tiny miniature versions of all these things for my dollhouse. I would make little tiny like steaks and little birthday cakes and little wheels of cheese and little vegetables, tiny, tiny, to put in my dollhouse. But even back then, no easy bake oven for me. I used the big oven. We need to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll have some more. You're listening to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Remember that you can listen to Why We Cook every Tuesday night live on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, or you can podcast any of our shows on iTunes, and we are now broadcasting 24 hours a day. So in the first part of the show, I was talking about the Easy Bake Oven. The guy who invented it has died recently, and it got me thinking about how I learned how to bake and how I learned how to cook, and how because I never had that Easy Bake Oven, I kind of skipped right over that phase and went right upstairs to the kitchen and was taught to cook and to bake on my own, and how I really value that, and I really appreciate that now, and am glad that my parents didn't spend the $16 for a total piece of crap plastic box with a light bulb. But, you know, there's a little bit of me that still has that twinge of, huh, I wish I had had that toy. But it's okay. I've moved beyond. It's all right. So now I want to just finish up the show by changing the subject a little bit and getting back to what I generally talk about on this show, which is food. Not that the Easy Bake Oven stuff isn't related to food. But it's late February, and we have a long way to go before spring. It's been a long, cold, wet winter here in New York. Although I was running in Central Park this weekend, I ran in the New York Roadrunners Race for Haiti this weekend. We raised like $500,000 for Haiti, which was great. And I noticed the little daffodil bulbs starting to come up in the snow, which always just gives me, you know, immense happiness to just see these little like 1-inch green tips sticking up through the snow, through the mud. Those little tenacious daffodils were coming up. But anyway, it's still February, and I feel like the only real culinary bright spot we have at the moment is citrus. Thank God for citrus in the winter. And there are a couple of really interesting varieties of citrus out now that a few years ago you may have never heard of or were very hard to find. One is something called the Caracara orange. They're starting to show up a lot more now. The Caracara are oranges that originally happened as a fluke. It was a fluke hybridizing of two different kinds of navel oranges in Venezuela, Valencia, Venezuela. But the ones that are available to us now are actually a mix of an orange and a grapefruit. And so they have this really nice pinkish interior, but less acid than a grapefruit, and their flavor is a little bit floral. There's a sort of element of rose petals to them, and berry notes, really nice berry notes. So they're really nice to use in a salad, or you could make a really nice tart with them. If you make some pastry cream or a little like orange curd base, and then slice those oranges up and put them on top, or they'd be great with just like a little bit of Greek yogurt and maybe some really dark honey. Something like that, or put a little sugar on them and gratinate them with a torch or in the oven, or just eat them like an orange. But those Caracara are really nice. They're not cheap, but you should try one if you come across one. They're, I think, really special. And my other favorite winter fruit is the blood orange. I love the blood orange. They're oranges that originally come from Sicily. Now they're grown in Texas and California, but they have a really dark, deep blood red interior, and their flavor is very berry like. It reminds me a lot of remember Fruit Stripe gum, the gum with the zebra on the package and it was stripey. Red flavor Fruit Stripe gum is what I think blood oranges kind of taste like. They have that flavor. but they're better for you. And they can be so beautiful when you cut them open that, like, I almost cry when I cut them open because the color is so beautiful. And sometimes people get them by mistake and they open them up and think something's wrong with the orange, but nothing's wrong. It's just a blood orange. One of the varieties is called Moro, M-O-R-O, like the Moors, you know, like it's almost black inside. There's one called Taroki, which is really good. And I forgot the other one. Maybe Sanguinacci, something like that. Anyway, generally the ones you find here are all the same variety. But I had lived in Rome for a few months, about a decade ago. And I was there from January to March, which is peak blood orange season. And one of the most amazing things was you could go into any little corner coffee bar in Rome and ask for a spremuta. Spremuta, which was a glass of fresh squeezed blood orange juice. And it was so good and so fresh and so vivid and red. And that's the only orange juice I like. It's the only orange juice I'll drink. I'm not a juice person generally. There are two foods that I really don't like. Well, there's more than two, but there are two things I really don't like. One is green peppers and the other is orange juice. I know it seems un-American, but what can I tell you? But blood oranges are here now. They show up in the market. I just used some today at work. I found some in the fridge. And they don't stick around much past March, mid, late March. So you should get them now if you want to try them. And when I can get them in March, I'll usually buy a whole bunch of them and then keep them in the fridge until Passover, which usually comes end of March, early April. This year, it's the last week of March. And then at Passover, I'll supreme them, which means cutting out the wedges, leaving behind the membrane, or slice them really thin and make a salad of them with very thinly shaped fennel and red onions, which is very traditional to make in Sicily in the winter. But I find it's great at Passover because it's a really nice kind of contrast to all that really traditional heavy stuff we eat at Passover, like brisket, you know, or turkey. The food at Passover tends to be a little heavy. So that salad is a really nice compliment. And it's like this nice fresh burst, you know, to lighten it up. It's a good balancing act. And I also like it because it's kind of like a little nod, like a little shout out to Sephardic food traditions. You know, the Jews of Spain and Morocco and Iraq and places like that, their food traditions, which aren't always so well represented because they're a smaller community. You know, my own Eastern European Jewish food tradition, it's just not as good. You know, it was like a lot of potatoes and meat and heavy and dairy and peasants. So I think somewhere back there, some of my ancestors must have been Sephardic because I like that food so much better. But I mean, you can't blame the Eastern Europeans for their food because it was Eastern Europe and that's all they had. And there were certainly no oranges growing in 18th century Lithuania. You know, so they were locavores by default. They were eating the potatoes and the cabbage and the dill because that's all they had. And that's okay. And I like to preach that locavore line as much as I can. And also, of course, the seasonal line. But this time of winter, I feel like how many more cold storage apples can one girl eat? So I make an exception for citrus in the winter. It's okay. It doesn't come from that far away. It's all right. I won't buy strawberries or tomatoes in the winter, but for some reason, it's okay with me to buy citrus. So I'm okay with it. I mean, we all have to make choices in life. So I allow the citrus choice. Anyway, we're just about out of time. So thanks for listening to Why We Cook this week. And like I said, check us out on Facebook or leave a comment on the Heritage Radio Network website. And we'll see you next week.